All right, so we're diving back into Colossians today, specifically chapter 3 this time. And we're going to be looking at the, you know, all the instructions about like unity and how that works in the church and in the family. We're going to be using a lecture series on the prison epistles by Dr. Daniel K. Darko to kind of guide our exploration here. So get ready, because we're going to be talking about some stuff that is kind of surprising about how families used to work and, you know, things like the place of slaves and all kinds of stuff that might kind of make you rethink what you thought you knew about ancient family life.
Yeah, it's really interesting how Paul writes this letter from prison, and he lays out, like, you know, this plan for how to have a thriving community.
Mm.
And it all starts with the church. Dr. Darko really emphasized this whole idea that you can't just, like, passively have unity.
Yeah, what was it he said? Something like...
Yeah, like, some of us don't want to do a lot in the church.
Yeah, yeah. But Paul seems to be saying that it takes more than just, like, showing up on Sunday morning, right?
Oh, totally. He wants people to be really engaged and, like, recognize that everyone in the church has something to offer.
Hmm.
It's this shared responsibility for, you know, spiritual growth. Like, you're not just supposed to rely on the pastor or teacher to do all the work.
No, it's like a spiritual gym. You can't just, like, watch other people work out and expect to get stronger yourself.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting, that whole concept in Colossians 3.17 about doing everything in the name of the Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Darko called that the great challenge, right? Because it's not just like wearing a badge. It's about representing something way bigger than yourself.
Yeah, that really got me thinking, too. He made this point about name being more than just like a label, but signifying a reputation. And it made me think about, you know, like how my actions affect how people see not just me, but like my faith, too. That's a pretty high bar.
Yeah, it is. And that kind of leads us to the next section where Paul starts talking about family life. And, you know, back then, the family structure was very different. You had husbands and wives and children, but also slaves, all living under one roof.
Oh, yeah. And we have to be careful not to view it all through like a modern lens, you know.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Darko said, we shouldn't impose our ideas about slavery, especially, you know, the transatlantic slave trade, onto this context.
Right. So much has changed over time with how society is structured and stuff, which actually is kind of a good transition, because next, Paul starts talking about the roles of husbands and wives. And let's just say, some of his instructions might raise some eyebrows these days, especially that word submit.
Definitely. That word comes with a lot of baggage. But if we really dig into what the Greek word means, like Dr. Darko explained, it's about voluntary submission, the kind that is fitting to the Lord. It's not like being forced by the husband. It's about choosing to align yourself with your husband's leadership, especially since you share the same faith.
So it's less about just doing whatever he says and more about a conscious decision you make as a wife because of your commitment to God.
Exactly. It's about wanting your will to line up with his, because you see him as like the spiritual leader of your home. You know that story Dr. Darko told about flowers? How he learned that they mean nothing if there isn't real love behind them?
Yeah, yeah.
It made me think about how often we just like go through the motions in our relationships, even our relationship with God, without having that genuine heartfelt connection.
That's a good point. It's not enough to just say or do the right things. It's about why we're doing them. But we can't forget about Paul's instructions for husbands either, right? It's not just the wife who's got work to do. He says husbands have to love their wives and not be harsh with them.
Yeah, and I think Dr. Darko said it best. A husband who is that loving will make it easy for a wife to submit. But that kind of mutual love and respect wasn't exactly common back then.
No, definitely not. I mean, remember that thing Dr. Darko mentioned from Josephus about how women were obligated to obey their husbands no matter what? And then there's that crazy quote from Demosthenes about wives, mistresses, and concubines. It honestly sounds more like a business deal than a real relationship.
It just goes to show how different Paul's vision for marriage was from everything else at the time. Like, he's calling for people to completely change how they think about marriage. He wants them to build it on mutual respect and love and faithfulness.
And then Paul shifts to talking about children. Right. He says it pleases the Lord when children obey their parents. It's easy to forget how important family honor was in those days.
Yeah, Dr. Darko said that if a child disobeyed, it could bring shame on the whole family. And the father was responsible for keeping that honor intact, which meant discipline was a big deal.
But Paul doesn't just stop at obey your parents. He also says that fathers shouldn't provoke their children to anger. He seems to understand that there's this balance between disciplining and nurturing a child.
Definitely. And then we get to, I think, what might be the toughest part of this chapter to read today. the part about slaves and masters.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely something that makes us uncomfortable. But like you said earlier, we have to keep the historical context in mind. Dr. Darko was very clear that slavery was just a normal part of life back then.
Yeah, in some cities like Ephesus, he said maybe like 30 to 35% of the population were slaves.
Wow. So it wasn't like the early church was trying to get rid of slavery altogether. They were trying to work within the system and push for people to treat each other better.
Exactly. It's like Paul is showing his wisdom here. He doesn't tell people to start a revolution or anything. He wants them to start with a spiritual revolution in their own hearts. Yeah. He tells slaves to obey their masters with all their heart, not just to avoid punishment, but because it's like serving the Lord.
It's like finding a way to make something good out of a really bad situation. But what about the masters? Does Paul just let them off easy?
Not at all. He reminds them that they answer to a higher authority too, and that they need to treat their slaves fairly and justly. Dr. Darko said it was like knowing your boss is always watching you. Wouldn't you be on your best behavior then? It's about holding the masters accountable.
That makes sense. So we've got all these different instructions, but they all seem to have the same goal, right? Creating a community that's totally different from the world around them. One that shows Christ's love and stands out from everything else that's going on.
Yeah. It's definitely not just a set of rules. It's like a whole different way of life changed by the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
One that shows Christ's love and grace in everything you do.
I'm with you there. So before we move on to the last part of chapter 3, what's standing out to you so far? What do you think is the most important thing for people to take away from this?
It's that idea that it's not enough to just have the right beliefs. You have to live them out in your relationships, both in the church and in your family. And everyone has a responsibility to make that happen.
I totally agree. It's that connection between individual faith and communal action, which I think leads us perfectly into the last section of chapter 3, where Paul really paints a picture of what that looks like when you actually live it out. But we'll save that for part 2 of our deep dive. Welcome back. So we're picking up where we left off in Colossians chapter 3 with Paul's vision for how to live differently, you know, as Christians. He's talked about how we should act within the church, within families, and now he kind of brings it all together.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to think that these instructions are like super outdated, that they only applied to people back then.
Yeah.
But Dr. Darko made this point about how revolutionary this would have been, especially in a society that was so messed up.
Yeah, he talked about the early church being like this light in the darkness.
Right? Exactly. It's like that image from Colossians 1 about being a light in a world full of spiritual darkness.
I like that. It wasn't just about being a good person. It was about being part of something so different, so much better, that would actually draw people in.
And I think that's what's so cool about this last part of chapter 3. Paul lists all these virtues. Wives submitting to their husbands, husbands loving their wives, children obeying their parents and all that. And then he says, and whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
Wow.
It's like he's saying, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it's about why you're doing it. Are you doing it for Jesus or not?
It's like that saying, preach the gospel at all times, use words if necessary.
Right. Like your whole life should be the message.
Yeah.
And then it feels like things kind of shift as we move into chapter 4. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, now that we've got the foundation, how do we actually put this into practice?
Yeah. And the first thing he talks about is prayer.
Yeah. He tells the Colossians to continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But what I found really interesting is that he actually asked them to pray for him.
I know, right? He's in prison, but he's still thinking about the church's mission. It shows you what his priorities were.
Right.
Yeah, it reminds me that prayer isn't just about asking God for things. It's about lining up with his will, helping him do his work in the world.
Totally. And then he says, walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. He's talking about interacting with people who don't believe the same things we do.
It makes you think about how we do evangelism. Are we being pushy or judgmental? Or are we showing Christ's love in a way that makes people want to know more?
It's not about shoving our beliefs down people's throats. It's about living in a way that makes them curious about what we believe.
And then he talks about our speech being seasoned with salt. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person.
That image is so powerful. It's like, yeah, we need to speak the truth, but we got to do it in a way that people can actually hear.
Like salt makes food taste better, but you don't want too much of it.
Exactly. And it's so relevant today when it seems like conversations about faith always end up in arguments.
We've covered a lot of ground in Colossians 3 and 4, from how we treat each other in church to family stuff to living differently from the world and interacting with those who aren't Christians, it's a lot to think about.
Yeah, and it's not just a list of rules. It's about having a life that's actually changed by the gospel, a life that shows Christ in everything you do.
So before we wrap things up, what are you taking away from all this? What do you think is most important for our listeners?
It's this idea that Paul's calling us to something radical, to let the gospel change every part of us, from our closest relationships to how we treat people who don't believe like we do.
It's about choosing to live differently, even when it's hard or doesn't make sense to other people.
And it's not something we can do on our own. Mm. We need each other to encourage us, challenge us, and help us stay on track.
That's so true. So as you finish up reading Colossians, think about this. How can you be a light in your world? How can you live out these things we've been talking about? Unity, love, service, all that good stuff. How can you make a real difference?
And don't forget, we're all in this together. We're walking this path together.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Colossians. We hope you've learned something new and that it'll make a difference in your life. We'll see you next time. Keep exploring.
So as we wrap up our look at Colossians, there's one more thing I want to kind of dig into. Throughout the letter, Paul's always dealing with this, like, tension between these big spiritual truths and the actual world his readers lived in. And I think for us, reading it today, that tension's probably most obvious when he talks about slavery.
Yeah, that's definitely a part that can be hard to read, especially now when we understand human rights and equality so much differently.
Yeah, it's definitely uncomfortable. But if we try to see it from their perspective, you know, back when slavery was just everywhere, it helps to understand how Paul was approaching it.
Dr. Darko made a good point about that. He said the early church wasn't really focused on, like, getting rid of slavery completely. It was more about changing how people acted within that system. So instead of saying slavery's got to go, Paul's trying to change hearts and minds, right?
Yeah.
Like telling slaves to obey their masters with all their heart, but not out of fear, because it's like serving the Lord.
Right, like finding meaning, even in a really messed up situation.
It reminds me of that Viktor Frankl book, Man's Search for Meaning. He was in a concentration camp, but he still found purpose in the middle of all that suffering.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
And it makes me think maybe we can learn something from that for our own lives. Even if we don't face slavery, we all have stuff that's hard or unfair.
Totally. Like, what if we tried to find meaning and purpose, even when things are rough? It could be a tough job, a relationship that's struggling, anything, really.
That's a good question to think about. And it kind of brings us back to what Dr. Darko said about the early church being so different from the world around them. They weren't trying to blend in. They were showing a new way to live.
And that's what makes Colossians so powerful, I think. It's not just some old book. It's a challenge to us to live differently, to go against what our culture says.
It's about being deliberate with our choices, even if they're hard or people don't get it. It's about being that light in the darkness.
And that's something everyone can do no matter where they are in life.
Totally.
So as you finish reading Colossians, keep these things in mind. How can you be a light where you are? How can you live out these values of unity, love, and service in a way that really impacts the people around you?
And remember, you're not alone in this. We're all on this journey together.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Colossians. We hope you found it helpful and challenging and maybe even inspiring. We'll see you next time. Keep exploring.